22-2008, United States v. Johns. Mr. Rothschild.
May it please the Court, Jake Rothschild for the appellant Richard Johns. Section 3553A2 sets out the four purposes of sentencing a court must consider in fashioning a sentence: retribution, deterrence, incapacitation, and rehabilitation. However, the Supreme Court and this Court have made clear that certain purposes are impermissible for certain kinds of sentences. Undisputedly, it is impermissible for a court to consider rehabilitation when imposing a sentence of imprisonment and retribution when imposing a term of supervised release. Because the district court did exactly that, this court should reverse. First, the record is clear that the district court impermissibly considered rehabilitation in determining the sentence of imprisonment. After hearing from the parties and addressing their arguments, the district court says that those are the things that I have to consider in fashioning a sentence sufficient but not greater than necessary to further the purposes of retribution, deterrence, and protecting the public. Then, quote, but also to provide you with the education and training and support that you need when you get out to make better decisions. That is a plainly incorrect statement of the law in the context of imprisonment.
Counsel, can I just stop you there? Because I think you started with the proposition that you cannot consider education or whatever. But don't our cases say that you have, it's only impermissible to lengthen the sentence to, you know, I think it would be better if you got this additional 2 years so that you could go to this educational program. Can you tell me what's your position on that?
Sure. So that's the classic example, and what Tapia is when the district court expressly says, or in this court's case in Tidsum, where they say, I could vary down to 18, but then you wouldn't be able to participate in RDAP. You need at least 24, 36 months, whatever it is, in order to participate in RDAP, and I think that would be great for you. That's sort of the classic example, but this court's case law in Thornton and other cases also make clear that it's not just, it doesn't have to be tied to any specific program, an increase in the sentence. It's whenever the district court sentence is grounded, even in part, on promoting rehabilitation, that is error. So there's sort of a caveat to that, which is, and again, Thornton is the case that makes, that draws this line, is that a district court can consider rehabilitation in response to a defendant's motion for a downward variance based on rehabilitation to the extent that it has an effect on other permissible factors. So there was protecting the public. So the logic is the defendant can move for a downward variance saying, I only need 36 months in imprisonment because at that point, I will be rehabilitated and I will have been able to participate in these programs, and I will no longer be a danger to the public. And that's a permissible consideration for the district court to consider. But Thornton also makes very clear that the court cannot then, denied the motion for a variance, it cannot not then rely on promoting rehabilitation as a justification for its chosen sentence at that point.
Well, and just as a follow-up, the government argues, I think it reads that sentence that you point out from the district court judge, that the district court judge was, suggesting that this would be an additional benefit. I mean, there's the first sentence, which is, this is the sentence based on proper considerations, I guess, which you would concede, and then has the second sentence, which says, oh, by the way, it also has this additional benefit. Can you respond to that reading of what the district court did?
I certainly don't read it as saying, like, just as an aside, incidentally, apropos of nothing, it would have this perceived benefit. It's what the district court is saying is I have to impose a sentence that's sufficient but not greater than necessary to meet the goals of sentencing and list the permissible ones, and then and also to provide you with the education and training. So it's continuing that thought, saying I have to impose a sentence that is sufficient but not greater than necessary to provide you with the education and training and support that you need. So those are clearly related concepts. And the government also argues that that this was just a rote recitation of the 3553A2 factors. It didn't really mean anything. And to the extent that it did, it was just saying that was a reference to supervised release conditions, because that is permissible to consider rehabilitation and supervised release. But the that's belied by the record, because the very next thing the district court does is start to discuss the opportunities available to him in prison. So it makes no sense if he's saying, if she is saying that I need to fashion a sentence that is sufficient to provide you with education and training and support that you need, and then only mention education and support programming within prison. They would have followed up with discussion of supervised release had they actually been talking about supervised release. And then immediately following that,
was the district court's mention of in custody opportunities in direct response to your request for a downward departure?
In context, it's not in, there's nothing to indicate that what the district court was doing was limiting its discussion of rehabilitation to denying the downward variance. It lists, it's certainly possible that that's why the topic was on the district court's mind. And in Thornton, this court says, like, it's understandable that the court in Thornton, district court in Thornton, went on to impose a sentence based on rehabilitation because, confusingly, the defendant is permitted to request a downward variance based on rehabilitation. So here, the district court made no attempt to explain, I'm mentioning this only in the context of denying your downward variance motion. And
do you think that the district court has to say magic words? I mean, that's kind of what you're suggesting, and I guess I'm wondering what those magic words would be. I'm responding to your argument, I'm not doing this on my own. I guess, help me understand that.
I don't think there are any magic words. I certainly didn't go that far.
Okay.
This court says all the time there are any magic words, but here there's no indication whatsoever that it was limiting its consideration of this to the motion for downward variance. And in context, it seems clear that the district court is considering all these purposes of sentencing in fashioning its final chosen sentence. Because, you know, it lists the permissible considerations, but also rehabilitation, and then goes on to say within this same conversation, or the same discussion, just within one page of transcript, that I'm imposing the sentence of imprisonment. I'd like to rebut a couple of the other points that the government makes. The government argues that there was no error here because the court focused extensively on criminal history. But Thornton makes clear that Tapia error can occur even when a district court articulates additional valid reasons for the prison sentence. And here, that's basically what happened. The district court did mention other permissible purposes. It certainly talked about criminal history and other circumstances of the defendant. But that alone is not enough to say that there was an error when the district court expressly stated that it had to impose a sentence for purposes of rehabilitation. And then as for the third prong, I think third prong is almost inherently satisfied in Tapia error, because we already have to show that the sentence was based at least in part on this impermissible purpose. So when the sentence is based on an impermissible purpose, and explicitly so, there's a reasonable probability that had the district court not considered that permissible purpose, that it would have sentenced Mr. Johns to a somewhat lower sentence. And here the district court gave a high guideline sentence. So even if the district court was inclined to reject the downward variance, still had plenty of room to work with within the guideline sentence.
Can you address your second argument about the
Yes, Your Honor.
The conditions, special conditions of supervised relief that were imposed in lieu of a fine. I'm not sure I'm understanding. If you can kind of walk me through the steps of how you reach your Tapia error argument.
Right. So the second issue is that the district court ordered two conditions of supervised release, a halfway house and community service, for the impermissible purpose of retribution. And we know that the district court did it for purposes of retribution for two reasons. First, the district court explicitly said that it was imposing the supervised release conditions in lieu of a fine. Fines are punitive. Fines, the district courts are statutorily required to consider A2A, the retributive purpose, when imposing a fine. And here the district court is expressly saying, in lieu of a fine, which is punitive, I'm imposing these supervised release conditions. It's basically the transitive property. If fines are punitive and the conditions are in lieu of a fine, then the conditions are punitive. But second, we know that the district court had imposed the conditions for punitive purposes because it explicitly said so. It said, after imposing those conditions, it said the total combined sanction with these special conditions is sufficiently punitive.
Aren't you on plain error on this one?
Yes, Your Honor, on both. We're on plain error.
On both, yeah. But I don't see how either Tapia or Benby can get you there on plain error.
So Tapia and Benby...
It certainly did not involve the imposition of special conditions like this in lieu of a fine. Neither one of them had anything to do with that, so I'm not sure how you get plain error here.
So both of them make clear, at the very least, that retributive considerations may not be reasons for a special condition of supervised release. And the government hasn't disputed that. It's certainly possible.
I do think that was based on dicta and Tapia, what we said in Benby.
True, but as you well know, this court is bound by the well-recent dicta just as much as a holding.
So you got that. You got that. And the government doesn't dispute that.
And
I get you that far.
Okay. And then, so the next step, even if just imposing it in lieu of a fine, even if that is not enough because it's at least conceivable that a district court could substitute conditions for a fine and still find that, you know, this is not for punitive purposes or these conditions are appropriate just based on the permissible purposes. We know that's not what the district court did here because they followed up by saying the combined sanction with these conditions is sufficiently punitive. That would be a bizarre thing to say, that when I add in these special conditions, the sanction is punitive.
I don't think that's clear at all that the court was saying, because I added these special conditions, the entire sentence is sufficiently punitive. But I think we have to infer that. And again,
I'm sorry, what?
I think you'd have to infer that. It's not clear, at least.
Yeah, that's certainly possible. And what the district court was doing was quoting the guideline provision 5E1.2E, which says, recommends imposing conditions in lieu of a fine, and instructs courts to ensure that the total combined sanction is sufficiently punitive. So certainly what the guideline is getting at and what it seemed what the district court was getting at is that there is a punitive aspect to these conditions. This is what is making the total sentence sufficiently punitive because I couldn't impose the fine because of the inability to pay. I see that I'm running short on time, so if I could just reserve it for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Walters?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Tiffany Walters for the United States. Johns has not met his burden to show that the district court plainly erred, either by imposing a term of imprisonment for purposes of imposing or lengthening a term of imprisonment for rehabilitative purposes, or by imposing special conditions for retributive purposes. I'll turn first to John's Tapia argument. Tapia pronounces a narrow rule. Tapia, as Judge Ide mentioned, prohibits lengthening or imposing a sentence for rehabilitative purposes. It doesn't simply prohibit the district court from having rehabilitation on its mind during sentencing. It's, in fact, required to do so for purposes of supervised release. In Atapia, the court acknowledged that the district court did something right when it encouraged the defendant in that case to take advantage of in-custody rehabilitation. This is something that's not barred by the Atapia rule. So here,
well, we said in Thornton, we've said that what Atapia means is if the court grounds the sentence, meaning it considers this or forms part of the sentence essentially, on perceived benefits to the offender of providing prison rehabilitation, you have Atapia. It just and it was clear that it can occur even if the district court articulates plenty of other valid reasons, we said in Thornton, if it grounds the sentence in part on that. And it does seem that this language, this particular paragraph, the court says it talks about what it's going to do in fashioning a sentence, and it cites permissible factors, and then says, but also to, meaning, but also I'm fashioning a sentence to provide you with the education and training and support that you need when you get out to make better decisions. Only you can make that decision.
Correct.
So that, I don't know, it's kind of hard to say that it wasn't a part of at least the court's rationale or one of the factors it considered.
I think it's important to look at the language in that section of fashioning a sentence.
I think that is important because that next sentence says, but also to, meaning I'm talking about what I'm going to look at in fashioning my sentence.
And the district
but
court,
also I'm going to look at this.
Correct. But I do think the district court also imposed a term of supervised release, and that is part of the sentence in this case. And this is the only time in which the court details...
No, the court wasn't there yet. It wasn't imposing a term of supervised release. This is clearly about fashioning and imposing the prison term. That's where it was at this point. It wasn't imposing the term of supervised release.
It does then go and discuss
it. It does, but it hasn't at this point. It's talking
correct.
About what I'm going
to
do.
And to the extent that supports that inference, still I would argue that is ambiguous language. Because it references the sentence and not specifically the term of imprisonment. The court doesn't go back through the 3553A2 factors before addressing supervised release. This is the court's one discussion of these factors. And then it goes through and pronounces the term of imprisonment and then the conditions of supervised release. And John's whole argument stands on that one reference to A2D. And I would argue that it's most similar to this court's case in Naramore, which also included a similar list of the 35A2 factors that included D. Mm-hmm. And in that case, sort of the order of operations was first the district court denied a downward variance based on an argument of leniency based on mental health conditions, and in that it referenced treatment and BOP. Then it granted the government's request for an upward variance. And then at the very end, it sort of had a sum up paragraph where it said, you know, and I pronounced the sentence for all these reasons and lists all the A factors, and this court did not find...
Naramore, wasn't that the case where the court actually did talk about rehabilitation after it imposed a sentence in connection with supervised release, or am I misthinking on that?
I'm sorry.
It seems like Naramore was trying to remember the facts of that. But didn't it talk about the concerns about rehabilitation after it imposed supervised release?
I'm not entirely...
The permissible condition when you're talking about supervised release, so...
It may have. I honestly can't recall specifically,
okay.
So I don't want to say...
Thank you.
Say
I appreciate it. I could be off on that.
Firmly, but I do know it came at the end of...
Right,
of
at the end.
At the end. And then Naramore had an interesting quirk. So this court looked at that language and said, okay, the court's referencing sentence, and that also included, in this case, a term of supervised release, and A2D is a permissible consideration for a term of supervised release. But the wrinkle in Naramore, too, was that it was an upward variance, so the court had a written statement of reasons after the oral pronouncement. And in that form, it had checked a box for the upward variance that actually referenced rehabilitative purposes. And the court there said, we're not looking for stray remarks to find Atapia error in a decision that was otherwise Atapia compliant. What the court was focusing on was that the reasons the court actually provided. And if you look at the reasons beyond this one reference to A2D that the district court is discussing, the court is concerned about the criminal history here, about this is the defendant's 23rd conviction. The defendant spent at most 18 months of his adult life at a time outside of incarceration. And the court's concerned about the seriousness of his offenses and his potential for recidivism. And all that, that hinges on this rehabilitation is this one reference to A2D. And it seems like quite a stretch to say that the district court chose to impose this high-end guideline sentence for the purpose of rehabilitation, or that, that it increased it in any way.
It only has to be a factor. It only has to be considered. And we were real clear about that in Thornton. Not for the purpose of, but it was grounded in part, we said. And we also have made it pretty clear that it needs to be a possibility that it was grounded in part on. You've indicated that it could be ambiguous what the district court said, and I think that could be true, but doesn't that favor the defendant here?
I don't believe it does because we're on plain error review. And so here, the defendant has a burden of showing that the error was plain or obvious. Mm-hmm. And the only way to get to this error is to combine both this one reference to A2D plus a discussion of in-custody rehabilitation plus a summary paragraph in the end that references the guideline sentence. And if you add that all up, you get to Tapia error. Mm-hmm. And that's just not the type of review that this court has done in these cases where it actually is reversed on Tapia error. The cases, when you look at the facts, have all involved really express statements where there's a connection or at least that it's grounded on the rehabilitative purposes. It's not just a stray reference. And this is more similar to Naramore, where you've got an accidental checkbox, which perhaps if you, you know, were going through it carefully in writing, you could detail and be very specific, or if you followed a script. But if you do that, then it takes away from the district court being able to address the defendant directly and encourage the defendant to engage in rehabilitation. If every stray remark or reference to A2D could be interpreted to possibly refer back to the term of imprisonment, that really handcuffs the district court in terms of the language that it uses, its ability to naturally address the defendant. And I don't think that's...
The remark argument is better if this hadn't come in the part where the district court said, here's what I think about in fashioning a sentence. It doesn't seem as much like a stray remark there. The placement of it seems pretty clear.
The placement of it? I can understand that reading of it, but again, I think that turns back to the ambiguity issue. And here we have plain error, and had the defendant objected, the district court could have said, let me clarify. Let me make clear that my reference here is just I'm listing the A2D factor or A2A factors. This applies to both imprisonment. Well, it doesn't apply to both, but it applies to supervised release, and I'm laying out the law that's referencing all parts of the sentence. And the district court could have clarified that easily, but it wasn't objected to. The district court didn't have that opportunity, and that would have resolved the situation here at that time. If there's no further questions on this issue, I'll turn to the second argument. Okay. Much like the first argument, here there is no clear, plain, or obvious error that this court could reverse on plain error review. The district court imposed the two conditions of supervised release, and in its discussion of the supervised release conditions, it provided supervised release reasons for these sentences to allow the defendant to contribute to the community and because of his lack of a reentry plan. And then it also said in lieu of a fine. And that's the limit of the discussion in the section on conditions of supervised release. The court then goes to restitution and finally to a fine, where it says, and it follows the guidelines to a T. This language comes straight out of the guidelines that the court found that the defendant was not able to pay a fine in this situation and indicated that the total sentence combined with the conditions of supervised release was sufficiently punitive. That is best understood as a reference similar to the 3553A factors where a sentence is sufficient but not greater than necessary to meet the ends of sentencing. Punitive isn't just for purposes of punishment. The Supreme Court and even the defendant's cases indicate that it can serve other purposes. It can serve a deterrence, and while that might be one permissible purpose, it's not clear to show that the district court grounded the sentence in retribution. The court doesn't reference A2A anywhere. It doesn't reference retribution. All we have is a sentence from the guidelines where the district court makes the finding that the guidelines suggest. And the defendant has not identified any cases that hold that this guideline is impermissible. This is a guideline that is applied routinely. And there's nothing to demonstrate that it would be plainly erroneous for the district court to apply the guideline as it did here. The district court's imposition of halfway house and community service is in many ways intended to be helpful to the defendant, not to be necessarily punitive. And while it may serve an additional purpose here as being an alternative to the fine, the Tapia rule is not that that there be any considerations in the district court's reasoning anywhere as to the sentence being punitive. It's whether or not that this sanction is founded in a retributive or an A2A purpose, and the record here is just not clear enough to show that it is in any way. Tapia doesn't address the guideline, neither does Benby. If the court were to hold that a guideline was impermissible in Benby, it would have done so clearly, and that language is simply not there to show that. If the court doesn't have any further questions on this issue, okay.
Thank you.
Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Your Honors. A couple of quick points. The government says that it's okay to encourage defendants to partake in BOP programming. That's absolutely true. But when a district court encourages BOP programming immediately after saying that isn't taking that into consideration in imposing the sentence, that's clearly Tapia error. Naramore is a blueprint for what district courts are supposed to do. In Naramore, the district court rejected the defendant's motion for downward variance sentence, which was based in part on rehabilitation. And then in imposing the sentence and in granting an upward variance, the district court never once mentioned rehabilitation, only mentioned permissible purposes. And then at the very end, in its statement of reasons, there was a checkbox that said rehabilitation, but the narrative explanation never once mentioned rehabilitation. So that's why this court said that that was just a straight remark. The checkbox was just inadvertent clerical error. And with that, I would ask this court to reverse and remand. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to you both. You presented some very, very good argument, and your briefs were helpful as well. The case will be submitted. And-